lifestyle, mind don't podcast. Living life, every day click podcast. Living on purpose, dog rolling up podcast. Wake up in the morning, 10 o'clock podcast. Living on purpose, dog. Living on purpose, dog. Living on purpose, dog. Hey, Sip It On Purple. We haven't really done one of these in a while. This is kind of awkward. But this is the somethingth edition of the Sip It On Purple podcast. Loretta Aide is on the other end. How's it going, Loretta?
It's going well. Going well.
Yeah, we I'm not sure where we fell off the wagon with regards to doing these podcasts. I think we did one for Nebraska where the guy said that Nebraska was going to beat Northwestern something like 55-7. And that was
that
really
does sound familiar.
That was really the last go around. We probably should have kept doing it, to be honest, just based off of that result. But I don't know, things got out of hand pretty quickly. and then after that they played it just wasn't worth it. But now the regular season for Northwestern's over, basketball season's in full swing. The conclusion to the regular season for Northwestern, obviously it was really nice to get back on track and end up in a bowl game. And especially when we said bowl game, it was looking for a while, even towards the end of the season, like Northwestern wasn't going to go maybe to any bowl. And even if it went to one, to maybe the Ticket City Bowl or the Detroit Pizza Caesars Bowl. And no one was
something even more depressing that I just couldn't bring myself to care about.
Yeah. And things worked out pretty well. We went over this. We kind of got over that a while ago, but the long name Meineke Car Care Bowl of Texas or whatever, you know, in the grand scheme of things, pretty good result, I'd say.
Yeah, it's a great result in terms of the caliber of the opponent and having the game in a place where people want to go,
yeah.
A real stadium. Not like that piece of crap Cotton Bowl last year where it was freezing on aluminum bleachers.
Considering
back memories of the old Foxborough Stadium. It was a complete piece of crap.
Northwestern somehow went 6-6 as opposed to going 7-5 last year and ended up in a better bowl game.
Yeah, I guess we can thank the Penn State scandal for that.
Yeah, MVP of the Northwestern Wildcats. Former Penn State, I wouldn't say it, but...
Yeah,
he's a bad person, but helped out Northwestern, that guy. And Texas A&M, not a bad, they also went 6-6, and they're probably a lot better than 6-6.
Yes, they're definitely the toughest 6-6 team out there. I mean, their losses are all to, they played in, everyone in the Big 12 is hurt by the 9 conference games. Definitely makes hurts your overall record. And plus, they played Arkansas in non-conference, so that's everyone in the Big 12 is at least decent, except for Kansas. So that's 9 tough games out of 12. That's makes things tough.
Yeah, the games that they did lose, Texas A&M, were all somewhere in the range of close to excruciatingly close.
Right.
I think they lost one game by more than a touchdown.
They got beaten pretty bad by Oklahoma, I think. But
yeah.
Other than that, everything was right down to the wire.
They took Oklahoma State to the wire, who ended up being the best team not to get a chance to play for the national championship. They went to quadruple overtime one time. I think against Missouri, if I'm not mistaken. The game against Texas on Thanksgiving was really just a bad final season of the Big 12, I guess, with all those, coming maybe 15. I guess.
We'll be talking to one guy later, a friend of mine who's an occasional commenter on the site, who is a Texas fan, and we're bringing him in as his expertise in how to properly hate on Texas A&M. He's going to give us his insight in dealing with their fan base. So we are going to talk to him a bit later.
I'm excited about that.
That result.
I'm excited about that because one of the great things about the bowl games is the opportunity to kind of learn a little bit about other conferences' hate. And Northwestern tend to be nice and stuff, and we really need the training from outside. We end up just being really friendly with, people from Auburn or Texas Tech,
Which we really shouldn't do, if you think about it. We're never going to see them again. You know, you can really afford to have a bad, horrible experience with these people, and it won't come back to bite you.
Right. See, yes, I remember my experiences with the Auburn fans in the Outback Bowl were great, at least before the game. There were some people talking trash after the game. But before the game, it was great. Texas Tech, I didn't have any bad experiences, even though I'd been warned that Texas Tech fans were completely insane. But it was fine. But Missouri fans, I definitely had some bad experiences. In fact, the guy we're going to talk to actually got in a fight with a Missouri fan at the Alamo Bowl, so we'll be able to hear that story, which is a very good story. But yeah, I think we're expecting some. It was partially because he wore a Texas shirt to the game.
Oh, well, that's Missouri just, yeah.
About that.
Yeah. But most of the time it ends up where, even in the online world, you know, it's pretty congenial and everyone's, you know, kind of being friendly with the people for out of conference. And we try that with Texas A&M, which is why we're bringing in, you know, an expert on the subject. As for the actual game, Northwestern, to be honest, at least at first, you know, the first glance, seeing the games that A&M did play, seems a little bit not so great for Northwestern as a matchup.
That's for sure. They got a lot of talent there, although I think they have had some injuries, but even still.
Well, apparently their preseason all-conference nominee running back, Cyrus Gray, is apparently back. Ryan Tannehill, people have heard of. He's the guy who, you know, you see when they're, like, plotting out, you know, the quarterbacks that are going to get drafted next year, and you're thinking, where's Dan Persa? Although Pat Fitzgerald thinks that Dan Persa is an NFL prospect, so that's good to know.
That's true. Tannehill used to play receiver for them, I'm pretty sure. He's a converted wide receiver. It's
yeah.
Like the opposite. For Northwestern, we move quarterbacks to wide receivers.
Yeah.
Just tend to move wide receivers to quarterbacks.
We maybe should look into that. Christian Jones next year, replacing King Coulter and Trevor Siemian under center. It is the last go around for the for a lot of, you know, kind of important in the grand scheme of Northwestern football people. Unfortunately, Jordan Maven's out, which is kind of a problem.
That's a huge problem.
Yeah.
What's the name of that poor kid who
Daniel Jones.
Yes, thrown to the Bulls against
so
Michigan State.
That's really one of the things that, you know, is a little bit scary. Because, Maven got hurt, and, you know, all of a sudden Daniel Jones had been kind of playing with the first team a little bit in practice. Maven was, you know, not up to speed. But he was not ready to guard B.J. Cunningham. And, you know, it's not advisable to assume that he'll be able to stick with the number one receiver from Texas A&M. Jeremy Matthews has come a long way over the course of the season. I think in the first few games of the year, he was getting lit up every week after week.
Yeah, that guy from Boston College really took him to school.
In his only game of the year, and he'll be back next year. MoMA. But Matthews and especially Ibrahim Campbell, who is getting really ripped apart when Northwestern was not doing well, kind of came along as the year progressed. And the secondary kind of almost seemed like a decent unit for a few games there when Northwestern pulled out its winning streak. And then when Maven went out against Michigan State, that sort of, you know, opened the floodgates a little bit. That was kind of a deciding factor in that game.
I think Matthews is eventually going to be pretty good. By the time he's a senior, I think he'll be a good...
Matthews is a senior. Or do you mean Campbell? Jeremy
Matthews is a senior?
Yeah, Jeremy Matthews started out as a true freshman wide receiver, then went to running back, and then switched to quarterback after his sophomore year, and this was his first year actually playing there. So, yeah, he is a senior now. Campbell is a redshirt freshman, who was actually named freshman All-American, presumably by people who weren't watching the first few games. But he came a long way.
I feel stupid with that. I was sure he was a sophomore or junior, but yeah.
No, he switched around a lot.
Maven's also a senior, right?
Yeah, Maven's a senior.
Okay. Okay.
Refresher course for those of you Northwestern fans who.
People like me who've just been doing nothing but paying attention to basketball for the last.
I'd like to say that one of my skills is a almost freakish ability to tell you what year various people in the Northwestern football program are after having 4 years of paying somewhat decent attention and somewhat goofing off and writing things about people with funny names.
Right, but now you're going to press conferences and stuff. So I
was doing that for a while for Wildcat Report. That was I have to know what's going on is a little bit of a stretch, but it's good. It helps. You can coast on Teddy Greenstein's knowledge, to be honest. Did it every week. The secondary had a little bit of a hiccup there, but, and especially with Maven out against A&M, that's not good. There were some other injuries. Nico Mufuli's out, the defensive lineman. However, you do expect good things from the last game that Dan Persa and Jeremy Ebert are ever going to play. Dan Persa's first bowl game. Northwestern hasn't won a bowl game in 60 years, but they also haven't played one with Dan Persa.
Yeah, so great to see what Persa can do. And hopefully with the lug laugh, we'll get lots of trick plays and find ways to get Coulter involved. Definitely seen some creative plays in the bowl games the last few years.
Yeah, I was definitely pretty pleased with that, first of all. And also, Coulter definitely kind of came into his own in his various roles as the season went along. It was clear they were going to use him that way for a while, but it wasn't really getting results. I mean, it was in terms of yardage, but he was definitely a contributing factor in some of the games that Northwestern won, playing that wide receiver / everything / quarterback position. So that was nice. They were also using Vedric Mark as like a running back, which seemed pretty successful. And really that unit kind of came together. For the offense kind of clicked all year, but really the force behind, things like beating Nebraska was that the defense finally, played a full game and they started running the ball too. Northwestern was actually able to run the ball successfully in that game, which isn't really something you associate with Northwestern the past few years. And it's the type of thing, I guess, when you put all those things together, you hope that offensive unit can click in both of those ways. It's also, sadly, the last game for Jacob Schmidt, who will be sorely missed by a lot of the readers of the site, I'm sure.
He's actually played better than the last match of the season.
He definitely... Yeah.
He had a 100-yard rushing game in Big Ten play.
Yeah.
Never thought that was going to happen.
Jacob Schmidt really... we make all the jokes, but he did turn around, and that was nice to see, especially after making all the jokes. He put up 100 yards against Indiana, and also was getting 4 or 5 yards of carry against Nebraska and Minnesota, which was nice. I just pulled up the stats for those of you out there who don't who just think I know that off the top of my head. The question is, I guess, when you look at all these things and the way the team improved over the course of the year, going from a team that, was 2-5, lost to Army, obviously 6-6 isn't an optimal finish, but when you consider the situation they were in, the fact that they needed a win against Nebraska or MSU really to make a bowl, and then, they went into Lincoln, and that was kind of a season-defining moment there.
Definitely.
I could give them
the... I also think it's... when you look at this for Northwestern, it seems like in future seasons they're beefing up the non-conference schedule by trying to play some tougher teams, and also the Big Ten's going to 9-game season. And I've been thinking about this, and I really do not think this is a good thing at all for Northwestern, because... Now, I think it's great whenever the... a program decides to try to come up with a tough schedule, I think everybody is almost always happy about this. Okay, that's good. We want to challenge ourselves, et cetera. But the really easy non-conference schedules are a pretty huge factor in Northwestern being bowl eligible the last 5 years in a row. And if they played someone like say they played, you know, say they played Stanford every year for the last 5 years or played Notre Dame every year, which, I mean, Stanford's obviously been really good the last 2 years, but even a few years ago they weren't. But if they started doing that instead of playing FCS teams, then I think they wouldn't have been bowl eligible a couple of these times. Well, and people wouldn't be feeling quite as good about the program. So it's kind of a trade-off in, you know, do you want to just pile up the wins and get bowl eligible, or do you really want to challenge the program?
It's probably not going to get rid of the FCS games so much as it will the I think they just threw Eastern Illinois on the schedule or someone like that for a few years from now. But sort of the lower level, the Rice type of games. And when you look at the fact that people were saying, well, Northwestern kind of beefed up its schedule this year. You know, BC turned out to be awful, which obviously Northwestern had no chance in, or no, you know, fault in the fact that BC was awful. But, you know, they had those four very easy games in terms of non-conference, and they still ended up going 3-1. And it almost cost them a bowl berth, the fact that they lost against Army.
Right.
Because, to be honest, looking at the skill level of the team, I mean, they lost a lot of close games, as did, you know, other schools. But, you know, it could have very easily been a team that went 6-6 with only two conference wins. You know, they probably should have beaten that Army team, and they probably shouldn't have beaten Nebraska.
Right.
Although, obviously, that's the way football works. That said, you know, we talked about how Texas A&M had a lot of close calls. I mean, Northwestern was kind of a poster child for getting up in games and still managing to lose over the early part of the season. So, you know, there's that.
They lose by pretty significant margins after having early leads. It wasn't always like Michigan. They had a 10-point lead, then Michigan won by 18 and just completely dominated the second half.
Well, in retrospect, you'd probably like to have the Illinois game back, where they were up by 18.
Yeah.
And Illinois also turns out to be a 6-6 team and not ranked as they were at the time.
Right, and fire their coach.
Yeah.
Situation.
If you actually look at the games,
fired their coach too.
Yeah, so that's a good. That's really the one positive. You know, it's always sad to see a Sherman go down.
Yeah.
For me. You know, that does give. They've got a. They should be excited about their new coach, Sumlin from Houston, but it does leave them in kind of a little bit of a lull for the bowl game. If you're looking at program excitement, Northwestern is definitely a lot more into this than Texas A&M. I feel like Texas A&M, they're definitely going to have more fans because the game is 2 hours away from College Station, something like that, at the game, whereas Chicago is a lot farther.
There's more of them, more Texas A&M alums in Northwestern.
Yeah, I'd say. All those Aggies, dude. Too many Aggies. But, you know, with them going 6-6, and it's their last year in the Big 12, and, you know, it's Northwestern, and they don't even have a head coach. I mean, obviously they're going to want to win, but it is a little bit less, you know, when you compare it with Northwestern, who's always urgent to get that first bowl win.
Yeah, there is definitely a potential for Texas A&M to just completely nail it in the game. That could very well happen.
Yeah.
Kind of like Nebraska did that last year, I remember. They lost a Big 12 championship game in like a pretty, you know, close game. And then they played Washington, who was 6-6, and they had played Washington earlier that year.
And smacked them, right.
Destroyed them. Then they basically, like, you know, just didn't show up for the bowl game and lost. So something like that could happen again. But who knows? I mean, if we know anything about recent Northwestern bowl games, the game will at least be competitive and interesting.
I mean, just quickly, you know, looking, whatever I do, I have been going over to the Texas A&M site. I'm the 12th man, and obviously I'm probably not a good example because I haven't done that much about the bowl either, but they like you barely notice that they're even playing in a bowl game just from reading their site. You know, they're having, you know, issues with, you know, they want the with the coaching staff and all that stuff, and that's kind of taking more precedence. But, you know, they're Aggies, and there's, you know, way too many of them, and they care way too much about Texas A&M football. So, they'll show up.
Yes, I'm sure they'll be there in large numbers.
Yeah, so that should be good. Let's switch topics a little bit and talk about Northwestern basketball.
So, I typed a text to a girl I used to see, saying that I chose this cutie pie with whom I want to be. And I apologize if this message gets you down. Then I CC'd every girl that I'd CC round town. And hate to see y'all frown, but I'd rather see her smiling. Wetness all around me, true. But I'm no island, peninsula maybe. Makes no sense, I know crazy. Give up all this pussycat that's in my lap, no looking back. Spaceships don't come equipped with rearview mirrors. They dip as quick as they can. The atmosphere is now ripped. I'm so like a pimp. I'm glad it's night. So the light from the sun would not burn me on my bum when I shoot the moon. High jump the broom like a preemie out the womb. My partner yelling too soon. Don't do it. Reconsider. Read some litter. Sure on the subject. You sure? Fuck it. You know we got your back like chiropractic. If that bitch do you dirty, we'll wipe her ass out as in detergent. Now hurry, hurry, go on to the altar. I know you ain't a pimp, but pimp, remember what I taught you. Keep your heart, three stacks. Keep your heart, hey, keep your heart, three stacks. Keep your heart. Man, these girls are smart, three stacks. These girls are smart. Play your part. Play your part.
My bitch a choose it, lover. Never fuck without a rubber. Never in the seats like it on top of the cover. Money on the dresser, drive a compressor. Top notch hoes get the most, not the lesser. Trash like the fuck for $40 in the club. Fucking up the game, bitch, it gets no love. She be cross country giving all that she got. $1,000 a pop, I'm pulling Bentleys off the lot. I smashed up the gray one, bought me a red. Every time we hit the parking lot, we turn head. Some hoes wanna choose, but them bitches too scary. Your bitch chose me, you ain't a pimp, you a fairy.
Again, you know, one of the great things about this podcast are the segues. 10-1 so far this year against really, they've only played one, you know, obviously ranked team, and that didn't go so well. That Baylor game was something I'll try and black out for years to come. Just an epic beatdown in terms of basketball. that team is a lot better than Northwestern.
Yes, that was not good.
But still, you look at a team that's 10-1, they've only lost one game. They've beaten some major conference teams, even though not the best major conference teams. They won a non-conference tournament. I think a lot of what you, whether or not this is a successful, you know, non-conference schedule, I guess comes down to tomorrow night against Creighton. By the time I post this, it'll be tonight against Creighton. So there's that. But I don't know, that game really stands out to me as, you know, can kind of make or break how well they did this non-conference season.
Yeah, it would be a great win. Creighton is, I mean, their numbers are kind of like a better version of Northwestern in some ways. Like, they're all, I mean, they don't seem to play much defense, but their offense is really, really good. And they have Doug McDermott, who I think is now the nation's leading scorer.
Yeah, like, something's clearly wrong with this guy. He's like their best rebounder. He shoots like 60% from three. I think he takes all of their shots.
He's posting like a 70% effective field goal percentage and with like a 35% usage. I mean, it's just not even. I mean, guys don't do that.
He's averaging 25 points and 8.5 rebounds a game. Those are like, it's like if you took John Shurta and also threw in Drew Crawford and, like, maybe whatever, you know, rebounding skill Luka Mirkovic has. That's what the stat line looks like. So that kind of scares me. But at the same point, at the same time, and obviously they're a ranked team, and it's a road game.
I don't really think they're profile is that much, like if you just looked at from the things that voters look at, I don't really see it being that much different than what Northwestern has done. They don't really have any great wins. I lost at St. Joseph's, who was in the Charleston Classic and didn't win.
Yeah, that's true.
They're only really good wins. They beat, they won at San Diego State, which is a good but not great win. They blew out Iowa, but Iowa's terrible.
And they do have two wins against Big Ten teams. They're looking to make this a third.
They beat Nebraska at home also, but Nebraska's not very good either, so.
How often do you have the Big Ten team going into like the Missouri Valley Conference team and being the underdog? Basically, what I'm saying.
I think that happened to Iowa this year when they went into Northern Iowa and they got annihilated to the point where they're refusing to play on Northern Iowa anymore.
For good reason. It seems like that never works out. They also almost lost to Northern Iowa in football a few years ago. They need a blocked field goal at the last minute.
Two straight blocked field goals, yes.
Two straight, yeah, that's it.
That was the team that then went on to win the Orange Bowl, so.
That was the team that went on to lose to Northwestern later in the year. That's that really how I view it. You know, the Iowa fans do have a point that we kind of hype up those games, and sadly that didn't work out this year. But the point is Iowa's awful at basketball. I think that's really what we can all agree on here.
So is
Nebraska. So which puts Northwestern, you talked about it before the season started. Where exactly do you see Northwestern finishing in this conference now? And having seen, you know, most of the non-conference games.
Right, basically all the important ones.
And having seen that the Big Ten is basically far and away the best conference in the country.
Yeah, pretty clearly. Well, okay, Ohio State is obviously frighteningly good.
Yeah, Ohio State with Jared Solinger, I think, is the best team in the country.
Yeah, it's hard to argue against that one. Indiana is far better than I thought they were going to be. I did not think they were going to be very good. I was totally wrong about that.
And yeah, because not only do they have the one win over Kentucky, which you can write off as, you know, whatever you want to write it off as, that's a huge rivalry game, and everyone was amped up for it, and it was at home. They're also handling their business against the rest of their schedule.
Yeah, they haven't really even been challenged. Although they were pretty close against NC State, and they got the benefit of the worst intentional foul call in the history of basketball. Did you see that?
I didn't actually see that exact game because this was still at the point where I didn't think that Indiana was going to be anything.
It was like a 2 or 3 point lead, and like NC State just gave a basic foul, and they called it a potential foul, and I think fouled out the guy for like NC State again or something. It was completely like, I mean, they still probably would have won the game without it, but it was just. It was honestly one of the worst calls I think I've ever seen in my life.
So, but you look at that happened. You know, Wisconsin, you know, they have two losses to two good teams, but, you know, according to the KenPom stats, which is basically all I pay attention to in the world over friends and family and, you know, everything else, they're the number one team in the country, according to him. And I take his word for it a lot of the time. You know, they don't necessarily have a. They beat
BYU and UNLV.
Yeah. And then you've got Michigan State, the only teams they've lost to are NC and Duke. Purdue has had some Northwestern football-esque situations where they've been up 20 and blown it. You know, Illinois, I think, has only lost the one game to UNLV.
Illinois is shaky, though. They've had a lot of pretty narrow escapes against, like, they almost lost to Cornell last night or two nights ago.
Yeah, they also almost lost to St. Bonaventure, the Bodies. I was watching that because I don't have anything to do.
Perhaps most damning, they only beat SYU Edwardsville by 20.
Yeah. And then you've got Northwestern, who seems like they kind of. I still think there's a clear, you know, separation between the Nebraska, Iowa, Penn State crew. Who, you know, have a potential to, you know, lose a game to Florida Gulf Coast or something, which I think one of those guys did, and to everyone else in the conference crew. And you hope that Northwestern can go undefeated against those three teams.
We've been in that boat before.
Yeah, well, this time we actually are, like, you know, come on, let's do it this time and not lose those games. But, I mean, you're also wondering, say Northwestern manages to finish, you know, better than one of the other teams in the conference, like Minnesota.
I'm pretty short on Minnesota with Noam Bakhwe. I just think they're going to really have trouble in Big Ten play. Their schedule's been, they played nobody, really. I mean, like, I don't think they've played one NCAA tournament team in their non-conference schedule. So even though they're 10-1, I don't think they're much of a... I think they're going to have some trouble putting the ball in the basket in Big Ten play.
So do you think if 8th, or maybe, you know, I'm not really sold on Illinois either, 8th or 7th in the conference... That sounds pretty good to me right now.
Yeah, that should at least get them
on the bubble.
Yeah, if you assume they go 5, I think they play Nebraska only once, but yeah, if they go 5-0 against that crew at the bottom, which is much easier said than done, but if they do that, they beat Minnesota, they split with Minnesota, split with Purdue, there's 7 wins, split with Illinois, there's 8. Get one other win against the rest of the league, there's 9. Like, that's... That should be enough.
I would trade some of those wins for some wins in the next few weeks over, you know, real, you know, highly ranked teams, though.
Yeah. I would say the only games that really, like, would terrify me right now are Ohio State anywhere. Yeah. At Wisconsin. And probably, like, or at Indiana, I think is pretty scary, too.
Yeah.
They don't play at Michigan State. I think at home against Michigan State, they can be competitive.
I still can't get it through my head the way Northwestern played Ohio State last year twice, very close. That still doesn't make any sense to me.
Once with, in the other game with no bench.
Yeah. I still don't know how that happened. And I still don't really believe that that made sense. Like, I still expect Northwestern to get blown out by Ohio State every time.
Yeah, maybe they might be competitive at home, but yeah, that conference opener at Ohio State is going to get ugly. It's probably going to go about like the last time they went to Ohio State when Evan Turner just didn't mean things to us.
But yeah, he's just not a nice guy, Evan Turner. Neither is Garen Solinger. I hate both of them. Really, I'm not sure why in my 4 years, the one thing that I've really turned all my hate on is Ohio State basketball. I really can't fathom why. I could even get along with Iowa football. God, Ohio State basketball just is the worst.
What really annoys me about them more than anything is that they don't even sell out their home games usually because their fans are just like...
Well, also their arena is huge, right?
That's true. It is very big, but it's also... Basketball is just like kind of an afterthought. They're so football obsessed that... A lot of them I don't think you can appreciate like how great they have with basketball. I know they also play hockey there, and I don't think they've ever sold out a hockey game at home or something like that. But
that's not something I'm particularly worried about as a Northwestern fan. And also, I can't say anything because I'm like Northwestern doesn't sell out Welsh Ryan Arena, which is less than half the size of Ohio State's arena.
Right, but we suck. So, like historically. So,
yeah. Nice caveat there with the historically. But yeah, that's about it for now, at least with basketball, that I can think of. We'll be talking to, a Texas A&M hater later, and hopefully we're going to get some input from the people over at I'm the 12th Man. But, you know, basically I'm terrified of Texas A&M, and basketball is my only... I'm kind of counting on Northwestern to start picking it up in basketball. Yeah, for the 4th consecutive year that I've been at Northwestern. So we'll see how that turns out. And I mean,
it's just talk about your kids don't know anything. I suffered through the Kevin O'Neill era or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But basically. I mean, to be honest, Northwestern, you know, we kind of talked pretty depressively about Texas A&M, but, you know, Northwestern did go out and beat Nebraska this year, and that was out of nowhere. And they did play with some, you know, good teams, so I don't think anything's out of the question against Texas A&M.
Right, we didn't have any games where they got stomped from the opening bell.
Michigan State was close.
Tradition.
Michigan State was almost like that. but it wasn't quite like that. Northwestern was never really in that game. Mainly because there was a terrible
punt. They were until that fumble at the 5-yard line.
Yeah, then the punt to Keyshawn Martin.
Yeah.
People named Keyshawn just have it out for Northwestern sports, I think.
Oh, yes, the Keyshawn Johnson.
But talking about back in the day. But basically, that's it for now. Let's go to some music, I guess. And we're back, and we have a guest this time, if you want to explain that, Loretta.
Yes, we're joined by a very special guest, one of the world's foremost authorities on how to dislike Texas A&M football, this long history of dealing with crazy Aggie fans, the man who goes only by Wandy Rod, the scourge of dumb noobs on the internet, all fear the name. How's it going today, Wandy?
It's pretty good. I must mention, you forgot to say that I do not touch little boys. I figure that needs to be mentioned in any sort of sports-related things these days. So, yes, does not touch little boys.
All right, off to flying start.
That's always good to know.
Well, yeah, I guess. Go ahead.
Me and I also don't. I just thought I'd get that out there.
You know what? I might as well, too.
Yeah. Okay, so we're 3-for-3 on that one. First of all, to be honest, I always assumed it was Wandy whenever I was dealing with the Astros pitcher. Am I just not sensitive?
Well, it's like tomato, tomato, only it's one's wrong and one's right.
Oh, okay.
So you're going up against the Aggies, and as you may or may not know, I went to the University of Texas, and I've lived my whole life in Houston and Austin, and I've been dealing with these Aggie fans, so I guess I got to educate you people on what to expect out of the Aggie fan base and what a typical Aggie fan is like, I suppose. So first of all, I guess we can start by going over the storied history and all the great victories in Aggie football history.
This isn't going to go well. I'm sorry.
I thought maybe you were going to have some. I don't know.
Oh, no, I don't.
I couldn't think of anything. I thought maybe you guys were going to bring something to the table.
Oh, yeah.
I have nothing.
What, yeah. You mean that galleryfurniture.com bowl win in 2001?
I mean, I was perhaps going to put that one up there, or maybe I think they beat Florida International a couple years ago. maybe Arkansas State, I think, was a big game a few years ago. That's all that's coming top of mind for the storied Aggie football history.
Was the galleryfurniture.com bowl a real... I mean, to be honest, that's...
Yes, that's a real thing.
Yeah, there's a Houston businessman named Mattress Mack who's pretty famous in the Houston area. That was a bowl here. That's actually the same bowl that this is now, the Meineke Who Cares Bowl of Texas. And it's in the same venue, and it's the same deal, except now it was the galleryfurniture.com bowl. I think it was also at one time the story. When you think of all the great bowls in all of history, it was the EV1.net bowl, I believe. And then it was the unsponsored Texas Bowl, and now it's the Meineke Car Care Bowl
of Texas.
Texas. So basically, it's like the Texas A&M Invitational is what we can call it at this point, I guess.
I'm sort of curious about whether the EV1.net Bowl was named after longtime underage alcohol supplier Evanston One Liquors for any Northwestern fans out there.
There was an internet service provider here in Houston. This is what you get when you bring me to the table. You get the history of the EV1.net bowl. It was an internet service provider, a dial-up, and they kind of went out of business once this whole broadband thing took off, unfortunately. What else do we have for the Aggies? Their mascot is a dog. A dog that they almost ran over. They ran over this dog, and they kept it, and that's their mascot now. And it's a collie. And they basically worship this dog. This dog is the Aggies. Have you heard of the Core?
We wrote a little bit about this on the site earlier, but I'm really still. It still only sort of makes sense.
Shaven heads and swords who think they're in the army, and the highest ranking member ever of the Core is Reveille the dog. That's who they worship. If the people, the cadets, take the dog around campus and. It's supposed to be an honor to be able to pet this dog. And if the dog is in class and the dog barks, class is canceled.
Do they bring the dog into class?
Yes, they bring the dog into the class, and it's supposed to be like this huge honor that the you're in the presence of this collie named Reveille, and if the dog barks, class is canceled. It's over.
I think Northwestern should consider like freeing wildcats in various...
This dog is the five-star general of the Corps, or five diamond. I can't remember. I don't know. I don't keep track of these things. And all the dogs in the history, they're buried at the stadium so that they can watch the Aggies get their asses kicked on Saturday, I believe is the theory.
They do the same thing with Georgia. I'm not sure who came up with that idea first.
What's the dog name? Ugg?
Ugga,
at least
yeah.
That dog looks kind of tough, okay? Yeah, Ugga. Okay, that dog looks tough. If you run into that dog in an alley, you might want to back out, okay? If you see a collie, how is that intimidating anybody? Well, and first of all, you're Aggies. I don't know what an Aggie is. I don't know if you know what an Aggie is, but it's not a collie.
Yeah, there was some...
lectured on what exactly an Aggie was when you tried to write on the site or something?
Yeah, I did get someone was really mad that I didn't understand what an Aggie was. And it's just someone who studies agriculture.
I don't know. Ram sex? I don't know.
Well, there we go. Apparently, it's just someone who, studies agriculture, but it's not a dog. So they need to clarify that one. Yeah. Or maybe it is. Who knows?
So, who would you say your least favorite Aggie is of all time? You got any top contenders on the list?
Just any typical Aggie fan. These people think that their football program is a gift from God. R.C. Slocum, the best... coach in the history of the Aggies was fired after a 7-5 season. And how's that turned out for them since? You've got Mike Sherman, who's fired. You got Dennis Franchione. I think R.C. Slocum had one losing season in 14 years or something like that. He didn't lose a home game in the entire 1990s. And he was fired after going 7-5 because for some reason these Aggies think they should be national contenders every year when they haven't won a national championship since 1939. Okay, when you have to go pre-war to the storied history of your program, you know, I don't understand where the Aggies get off. They think that their program competes with Texas and the OUs, and even the Texas Tech of late has just been killing them. And I just don't understand. They have this, what's called the Aggie spirit. And to me, it's just Aggie ignorance. So I don't understand. These Aggies just think that they have the best, you know, programs in sliced bread. They're going to the SEC. If you listen to a typical Aggie fan right now, they will tell you that they're going to compete in the SEC West and be contending for SEC titles right out of the gate.
They might be able to beat Ole Miss. They got that going for them.
Yeah, I guess, you know, the on and off again battles with Vandy, I think, are going to be interesting for the Aggies in the SEC. But outside of that, I just don't see it. I mean, Kevin Sumlin is a nice addition. I think he's going to be a good coach over there. But the Aggies are starting with their backs against the wall when you have to play LSU, Alabama, and Auburn, I believe, too, every year.
To be fair, not many teams would compete in that division.
I know. The funny part is they're joining this. They want to join this. They want to do this. They think it gives them a better chance at a national title to go from the Big 12 to the SEC. This is what we also call Aggie logic, okay? Their quarterback is a converted wide receiver. What? That doesn't make any sense. It's supposed to go the other way around.
We were talking about that.
Northwestern converted many a quarterback. We, in fact, converted our fourth-string quarterback to tight ends.
Just two weeks ago.
That makes sense, okay? You have Matt Jones or Antoine Randall L. That's quarterback to receiver. You don't take one of your receivers and say, hey, can you throw the ball? Would you like to be our quarterback? That's just Aggie logic for you right there.
Well, he's a better quarterback than Stephen McKee. You got to give him credit for that.
No, don't you besmirch the storied name of Stephen Magee. He's a third stringer in the NFL, you know, which makes you an Aggie Hall of Famer, I believe. I'm not sure. I might want to check on that.
That makes you a Northwestern Hall of Famer for sure.
Who's the best quarterback in the history of the Aggie football program? I'm serious. Reggie McNeil? I guess he's a wide receiver in the Canadian Football League, I believe. I don't know, Stephen Magee, maybe a Ryan Tannehill. I really couldn't tell you. But who's that guy? Bubby Brister? Bucky Richardson? Bucky Richardson, was it?
Bubby Brister was an Ag?
No, I think it was Bucky Richardson. I'm getting my Bubbies and my Buckies mixed up.
I never heard of Bucky Richardson.
Well, exactly. That's the best quarterback in the history of the Aggie football program.
That Stephen Magee moment in that game against, I'll never forget this, where this is something that you love, where McGee got sacked on 4th and 10, and he was one of those guys. He was always talking trash, and he gets up and he gets in the Texas defensive lineman's face after he just got sacked on 4th and 1. He turned the ball over.
Yeah.
And for some reason, he was still going.
Stephen Magee embodies the Aggie spirit. He gets knocked down, he gets the shit knocked out of him, and he gets up like nothing happened and acts like he's the one who made the play. That encapsulates Aggie football right there.
You know, if the one Aggie I did kind of like was that 300-pound running back thing. You know who I'm talking about?
Oh, Jaworski Lane?
Yes. That guy was awesome.
Yeah, I have no problem with Jaworski Lane, and only because I hated facing him as a Longhorn fan. I mean, that's probably one of the few Aggies over the years I was actually afraid of. But yeah, he along with Von Miller, of course.
Yeah, Von Miller was a pretty good player.
What
do you expect from you here at the bowl? Do you think you're going to fight any Aggie fans?
You see, I had to make a strategic. Of course, there was an incident with a Missouri fan when I wore a Longhorn shirt at the Alamo Bowl, and of course there's going to be many an incident if I wear a Longhorn shirt at this bowl, so I'm going to kind of go undercover, get covert, pretend I'm smart, wear a Northwestern shirt, and then try to make my moves that way.
So here's my question for you. As a Texas fan, how does the whole Texas A&M to the SEC, obviously you said from their point of view, you know, they're excited about it, but how do you kind of view that whole semi-rivalry thing?
I don't really care. I mean, it's unfortunate. Would I like them to play the Aggies every year? Of course I would. But I'm not going to lose sleep over it. It's not that big of a deal. I would be much more upset if the Longhorns weren't going to play the Sooners, which is a bigger rivalry game to me. It means more. If they played that game 100 times plus as well, you have the neutral site at the Texas State Fair and the Cotton Bowl and all that whole atmosphere going on. And that game usually means something. Both teams are actually ranked when that happens. I mean, the Aggies had their run in the 80s and the 90s, but that's when Texas was awful. You know, you rarely have the time in this rivalry where both teams are up. Texas has, I don't remember what the numbers are, something like a 75-36 edge in the rivalry. So anytime the Aggies were winning, Texas was down. But you've had this for the last 10 years or so. Both OU and Texas have been a big deal. And a lot of times, the winner of that game has gone on to win the Big 12, and a couple of times the winner of that game has gone on to go into the national championship game. But this Aggie game, it hasn't mattered. Either Texas is good or the Longhorns are good, either Texas is good or the Aggies are good, or like this year, both teams don't matter.
So do you think Texas A&M is going to have to change their fight song? Being all about Texas there.
Oh, yeah, that's another thing we didn't get to go over. The Aggies have this burning sensation. They have to be better than the Longhorns. Everything measures up to the Longhorns for them. And their whole fight song is, okay, have you ever seen, maybe in highlights or whatever, when you see they sway back and forth in the stands at Kyle Field?
Yeah.
Okay, that's them making a sawing motion, sawing off Longhorns. And that's their chorus of their song is Saw Varsity's Horns Off. When in the early 1900s, the Texas, before they were the Longhorns, they were just called Varsity. Okay, and so their fight song is Saw Varsity's Horns Off. And goodbye to Texas University. That's because they call Texas University TU.
Yeah, I saw that.
Because they're not the University of Texas to an Aggie, even though, you know, that's kind of their official name. That's what they've been called since 1883. But the Aggies say they are a university in Texas, as they are just a Texas university and not the University of Texas, as their name states. That's another more Aggie logic for you right there. So their whole song is goodbye to Texas University, And they the Texas school song is "The Eyes of Texas Are Upon You," and that even makes the A&M fight song "The Eyes of Texas Are Upon You." That's the song that they sing so well. I hope you're enjoying the dulcet tones of my singing voice here.
Yeah.
So yes, the entire Aggie fight song is predicated on beating the Longhorns.
Does it?
And so I don't know if that's going to change.
Doesn't Texas mention Texas A&M in its fight song too?
They do say goodbye to A&M, but that's, I think, two words in an entire song. And if you go look at the Aggie verse, it's just the entire thing. And the words also change for OU, like when Texas plays OU, you've got to mix in a little OU sucks. There's the chorus of the A&M fight song, "Give 'em hell, give 'em hell." "Go Horns Go," which is the family version. "Give 'em hell, give 'em hell, make 'em eat shit" is the student version. And when you play OU, give 'em hell, OU sucks," which is, of course, very clever but on the Longhorns part, if you ask me.
So you guys, did you participate in all this singing when you were in school? Because, you know, I didn't go to Northwestern, but even when I'm in the Northwestern section of games, no one really knows any of the...
Oh, no, it's just that no one knows the alma mater.
It's like any other chant. It's not like the Aggies level chanting. If you ever read like an Aggie chant, it's like "Hullaboo Rah, Chicken Rock." It's a bunch of gibberish, and of course they're led by your local neighborhood milkman in a white jumpsuit because they don't have, you know. Apparently, they're still pissed off women have the right to vote, so they won't allow them to embarrass themselves and cheer on a football team. So they have male cheerleaders who lead yells rather than, you know, lead cheers. So I don't know whatever that is. I mean, Rick Perry, of course, was a yell leader. We all know how that worked out for him. I don't know. It's just another thing for them. They have yells. But we have this, you know, half the stadium says Texas. The other half says fight, Texas, fight, Texas, fight.
Yeah.
OU sucks. Of course, we get that going whenever we play OU. And, absolutely. The words of the fight song and after the game, win or lose, the school song, that's always sung in Longhorn events that I've ever been to, basketball, football, baseball.
Yeah, it definitely does happen at Northwestern games. I think you're wrong on that, Loretta. You had to throw in the women's lacrosse dig. That was unnecessary. no, that does happen at Northwestern games, too. I think Loretta's off on that one. I will defend that one. But, yeah, not as much, maybe. We don't do the sawing with the Longhorns. We should work on some sawing motions. Yeah.
No, I just remember, like, thinking it was weird. Like, I remember going to the Outback Bowl and seeing the student section, you know, when Northwestern scored a touchdown. Like, you know, they played the fight song. And there was this one really annoying guy in my section who, like, was really talkative, didn't know anything about football, but thought he did, and was kind of annoying me. But, like, he'd be in the middle of a sentence, and then when the fight song was starting out, he'd sing along to it. And he was the only person, like, within 30 people actually singing. And I just thought it was kind of weird.
But in the student section, though.
He didn't know the words. So I figured if he didn't, then maybe other people didn't. I don't know. I mean, obviously, I'm not the one to go to school. I'm not really the person to ask about these things.
Yeah, so shut your damn mouth, pretty much, is what we're saying.
Do we have any? Let's talk for a second. You know, obviously, like you said, Texas A&M. It wasn't as, you know, neither school was really a national, you know, powerhouse this year. Do you have any thoughts as someone who will be pretending to pay attention during the Meineke Car Care Bowl of Texas? Like, I guess...
On the game itself?
Yeah.
Well, I think, is Cyrus Gray going to play? That's
supposedly he's coming back, and he's apparently, you know, good at football, which is scary.
Yes, he's very good. He's almost as good as the other running back they have, the boy named Christine.
Yeah. But his last name's Michael, though, so that makes it all right, right?
I guess you can flip it the other way around. I mean, I don't know. I didn't name the kid. I don't know. I really don't know. I have a lot of feel of this game. The biggest problem is going to be if A&M cares, I think. What's it, a 9.5-point game, something like that, last I checked?
Yeah, around 10.
My goal for the game mostly is to be incoherent, yell at Aggies, and be drunk. So
that sounds good.
I'm going to go ahead and execute my game plan to perfection. I'm pretty sure. As far as the Aggies, it's going to come down to their defense and if they want to care about the game or not. They have the defensive coordinator Tim DeReuter, I think,
is leaving to Arizona State. I think is it? I saw something about him potentially leaving.
Yeah, he is leaving.
wow. So he's at, so who's coaching their team?
He is going to coach.
He's coaching, but he. He just got the job at Fresno, I believe. Fresno
he's
State.
Focusing elsewhere, so.
So between Mike Sherman, who got fired, and the interim coach, who's now the head coach somewhere else, and you know, well,
and Kevin Sumlin, who I don't know, who knows where he is. So I'm going to go ahead and call for a 42-5 win for Northwestern. I think it's going to be my final prediction.
With safety.
Yeah. They chased down Christine in the end zone for safety.
Well, Christine's hurt.
Yes.
Christine is hurt. With a very masculine injury, we can all be sure.
He's gonna be chasing the dog. Yeah, absolutely.
All right, yeah.
Yeah, that's all I got.
Yeah, thanks for the hate. There was a lot of hate.
Yeah, you really got going, man. That was present.
Yeah.
All right, thank you. That's what I'm here for.
Especially considering the just a lot of derision I got from that. You know, just completely looking straight down. I appreciated that. Thanks for joining us, Wandy, as I've been corrected.
Yeah,
I'll remember that forever and ever.
As the ladies call me.
All right. Any last thoughts?
No, I don't think I have anything else. I think we covered all of our bases. They have the milkman leading the cheers. Yes, we got to that. They worship the dog. Did we mention Gig'em? Yes, their whole phrase Gig'em.
Oh, yeah, you didn't get started on that.
Hunting.
Yeah.
No, I don't have a whole lot on that. I mean, it's about frog hunting, so...
Yeah, I was explaining to it involves stabbing with some sort of fork or something like that. Stabbing a frog or something.
Well, the way I was explained, because it's a thumb signal, I thought it was sticking a thumb up the bullfrog's ass or something like that. I'm not really positive on the whole physics and how it works with the frog hunting. Maybe you've been, I haven't, I don't know.
No, it's not a big thing in Evanston.
Okay, well, that's all I've got. I haven't been frog hunting. I've lived in Texas my whole life.
Good point. And I'll see you and enjoy the 2011 edition of the EV1.net galleryfurniture.com bowl. All right. So that's all for now. And Loretta, any last thoughts since I didn't ask you? And we're dragging it. All right, we're good over here. That's a wrap. All right.